wanted to talk about, yes, something that I hinted to yesterday in the discussion that we were having in the afternoon. This is going to be my attempt at working on a problem in information theory, which I won't claim it is realistic in any sense. As you will see, it's a simple toy problem, but which I honestly believe it's, I won't say this at least in absolute terms, but at least compared to all the work that I've done so far, it's the closest that I have been able to get to a real problem in sensor networks within information theory. So let's see if I can convince you of that. I always, to start my talk, I always like to start with some acknowledgement. In this case, this is joint work. Most of the talk is going to be based on a piece of work that we're doing with Joe Rosenblatt, who is a mathematician from Urbana. And problems related to these, which thinking about these problems, I've learned quite a bit about the one that I'll talk about today. Part of the problems that two of the students in my group, Mingbo Zhao and Leonard Silvis, are working on. And I also always like to thank NSF for footing the bills of our group. Okay, so this is the outline of my talk, and I'll start by giving an overview of a certain class of signals that I believe we should be looking at, that they occur naturally in the context of sensor networking applications. I will show how the study of how to compress those signals leads to some very interesting new questions. I won't have a solution to this problem. I think we are at least a year away from getting the solution that we want, but I'll show you some partial results which I believe are interesting myself. And towards the end, I'll talk a little bit about the applications that the sensor networking applications, which actually motivate all the work that we're doing here. So let's get started with the signal. Class of signals that we're going to study are waves that unfold over some region of space. I would like to argue that this is the most interesting class of signals to study. They occur in nature, they occur because we create them. There are different physical processes that give rise to them. The two cases that we've identified as being particularly relevant to the sensing application are the case of pressure waves and electromagnetic waves. So these things happen a lot in nature, and we want to study one particular problem which is of interest to me, which is, okay, how do we go about compressing these signals? It's sort of a right distortion problem. We are going to deploy some sensors, we're going to measure these waves, and then we're going to try to compress these sensor measurements, and then we're going to want to reconstruct them. What can we say about right distortion trade-offs in this case? I would like to argue that the natural abstraction, the natural formulation that one should look at in order to study this problem is not the things that we learned in school. The things that we learned in school deal basically with the study of bandelimit signals. So what are bandelimit signals? Signals which have a Fourier transform has a complex signal. Now, for this class of signals, we have two basic elements that allow us to build the entire theory of signal processing. One of them is the basis of same functions. So this allows us to take a discrete set of samples of this signal, and then we can interpolate them using sinks. And then the other one is the basis of complex exponentials. We can take any linear time-invariant operator, we can diagonalize it in these spaces, and then we can do things like design filters, for example, in the frequency domain, and that task is much easier. And these two things form our basic building block. So we have a continuous time signal. If it's not unlimited, we put it through an anti-aliasing filter. Now we get an unlimited signal, sample it, run it through a digital filter, out comes a set of processed samples. we put it through a D2A converter, and our goals are continuous time signal as well. I would like to argue that this is not the right way to look at waves. And why do I say that? Well, kind of waves that we have in mind are waves that are typically confined to compact sets. So we know that if a signal occupies a finite region of time or space, it cannot be bandlimited. That would still not be too much of a problem if we could take this continuous time, continuous space signal and put it through an anti-aliasing field. But that's not going to happen in this case either, because we don't have such a thing as an A to D converter which can take, for example, the entire sound field in this room, filter it, and give us a low-pass filter version. Many of the operations that we're going to want to do on these signals are not going to be linear time-invariant operations. So it's not clear what is the basis on which we should express these operators. So it's not clear how to diagonalize these operators that we would be interested in. So the question is, well, if we're going to drop the classical toolbox, what should be the right toolbox that we should be using? And I'd like to argue that what we should be looking at are PDEs. So let me show you a quick animation. This is what happens when you take a square membrane like this. You put some boundary conditions. In this case, there are perfectly reflecting boundaries and no absorption in the medium. Let me run this again. This time it will run a bit slower. And we give a kick to that membrane at the center. All the information that we're supplying here comes in the form of that kick we give it at the center. And look at the complex pattern that results from just the tiny amount of information which came in the form of a kick. This should give us the idea that the way in which we're going to process this signal is going to be very different from what we would normally do. In particular, although we get this very complex pattern, this is all a deterministic response to a solution constrained by the wave equation. So how do we process this kind of signals?
So, Sujay, in principle, you would be looking for the parameters defining your equation, right?
Let's assume I know what those parameters are. I'll get to it. Let's follow up in a bit. What's the source coding problem that I'm interested in? It's the following. You give me a compact set in Euclidean space. Inside that compact set, there will be a source of information, which is what's generating these waves. Let's assume I know all parameters in the system. This is a highly unrealistic assumption, but I said I was going to talk about something unrealistic. So let's assume that we know the boundary conditions everywhere, we know how waves propagate in this medium. What's important here is that we're going to choose a finite set of locations at which we're going to collect measurements of these waves. And then we're going to specify a fidelity criterion, for example, MISPAR. The problem that I'm interested in, the problem that I would like to find a solution for, is to understand what are the right distortion trade-offs that can be achieved when the signals that we're encoding are the solutions of this wave. Okay. So that's what we're after. So let me.
Is this a sampling question?
And, I'll prove a sampling theorem for waves, because that will come up as part of the solution of the problem of how do we compress waves. But sampling is an afterthought. What we want to do is compress these waves in the best possible way. It turns out that when you work through, so what's a proof in, what's the solution of a coding problem in information theory? You give an achievability result and you give a matching converse. The achievability result is one coding strategy, which you will argue is the best possible coding strategy. That achievability result, as part of its solution, will contain a sample problem. Yes. But
so
it comes as an after. That's the source of information is random, yes.
So
So you have one source at one location which is generating these waves.
Oh, so
and that's how you supply information.
So you have a random initial condition. Or a random excitation.
You have, okay, let me show you what you have. Yes?
Well, a quick question. So the complex pattern that you show, I mean, I'm assuming that this is, you're trying to model, you know, phenomena that sensor networks might be observed.
Right.
So the complexity is partly related to the reflection. You have boundary conditions and
yep.
the bouncing back and
yep.
forth. But in many situations, those boundary conditions might be beyond the area that you're observing, and your
okay.
patterns might be much, much simpler. In fact,
fair enough.
A kick might be a transient event, or a continuous source could be described by Maxwell's equation or wave equation, which
fair
are
enough.
Simpler to me. So do we need to go to this complexity? Are boundary conditions unnecessary?
It's, like you said, in some cases, the membrane will be so large that you can, and the absorption will be such that by the time the wave goes, the information goes from the location at which it's generated, there's energy dissipation in the membrane, and by the time it hits the boundary, you know, all the energy was dissipated, and basically it's as if the boundary wasn't there. Sometimes that will happen, some other times it won't. I'm choosing here a simple formalization where, you know, I start from some membrane in which these waves occur, and we'll see how to compress these waves. I'm not making any assumptions as to whether the membrane is large, the membrane is small, nothing.
So
okay.
The source of randomness is S?
The source of randomness here is S, yes.
So S is a random excitation.
Yeah, imagine that you have at one location something that is, you know, a source of pressure which is...
It's a singular point?
In this example that I'm going to show here, yes. It is a point source. Because that's the assumption that I will need to make to be able to get analytical solutions. Yes.
Why couldn't you add randomness to the equation itself?
Why
would it really complicate things very much?
What would that mean?
So I would say you may not know all the parameters of your models. You add some randomness.
And it's a harder problem than the one I'm dealing with. I haven't thought about it. I don't know if it's a little bit harder and, you know, the results would be a corollary to what I have, or if it would be 5 years or I have no idea. Okay, so.
So it is from a control theory context, you're asking an observatory question.
I haven't thought about it from a control perspective, but go ahead.
Yeah, because essentially you have a linear quadratic equation.
Yes.
And therefore, you could represent it possibly with an interdimensional radio
okay.
in a forward sense. And you're asking the question, is the operator convertible by observing the selected set of samples? That's the traditional control theory. And actually,
is that what I'm asking?
Yeah, I mean,
if you could reconstruct the initial condition,
then you could essentially figure out the partial differential equations. So ultimately,
yeah,
your task is...
Wait until I formulate the source coding problem, then we take up this point again. Because I will not need... My goal is going to be to approximate the waves. It's not necessarily to reproduce the source itself. So, we'll get back to it. Here's my setup. Here, I'm just to make an illustration, I have a one-dimensional membrane. So in this case, to be able to make a plot, this coordinate indicates space, and this coordinate indicates time. So think of a string, but not a string that vibrates like in the string of a guitar, but it's a string that vibrates in one dimension. So imagine that there's some point on that string that expands and compresses in one dimension, in that direction of the string. So that's what we have here. And these amplitudes that I'm showing are the pressure amplitudes. It's not, you know, the string doing this.
Okay.
So we have, here's a source, here's the waves that that source generates. We have our PDE described either in time or in frequency for the time variable. Now, turns out that in this simple setup. I will be able to give you, just using textbook techniques, nothing interesting here. I'm going to be able to give you a solution to that YPD. So assume the following. We have a homogeneous, frictionless, one-dimensional membrane. We'll choose the length to be pi, to get rid of some annoying constants. We will have perfectly reflecting boundaries. We capture that by saying that the derivative of the pressure in at the boundary point is zero. So that is intended to capture, for example, the idea that, you know, if I'm speaking, I'm inducing pressures on this wall, but the wall is not moving. So the pressure itself needs not be zero, but there won't be motion of the wall. That's what we're saying with this. We have a point source, which acts, you know, there's an arbitrary function of time, and which acts at a specific location, x0. And under these assumptions, it turns out that the solution to that wave PD is of this form. It's the convolution of that function of time and something that depends, some trig series that depends on the location where we're taking the measurement and on the location where the source is being applied. So this is the structure of the signals that we're going to measure with these samples. And the question is, how do we compress this subject to a fidelity criterion? So I'm going to tell you what my codes are for this problem. So a code is going to consist of a construct that depends on all these parameters. So what are these parameters? Well, I'm going to choose a block length n, and I'm going to choose capital N fixed locations. These are positions within the membrane. My encoding functions are going to be functions that map from the pressure signal that is measured at that particular location into a discrete set. So we heard this morning something about the dangers of dealing with bits. Well, I'm feeling a bit reckless here, so I'll hang out with dangerous people and I'll still stick with bits. So that's what I'm choosing here. My decoding function is going to take all of these bits generated by all the sensors, and it's going to produce an estimate of the solution of the wave equation. And I have to choose a distortion measure, which in this case I choose it to be mu square. Okay, so that's my setup. And so these are the codes that are allowed to be considered in my problem. All my codes can do is measure the wave at a finite set of locations, encode somehow these waves, ship this to the decoder, and the decoder, based on all these bits, has to produce an estimate which has to satisfy the wave PD. Okay? Now, in the classical sense of information theory, I'm going to define a notion of achievability with n encoders in this case, which is going to be a tuple which contains all the rates that are achievable, the set of all rates that are achievable at a certain distortion level. And I'm going to define the rate region with n encoders as the set of all rates that are achievable at that distortion level d. And finally, this is going to be my notion of a distributed rate distortion function. It's going to be I'm going to choose it to be the infimum over all possible ways of placing my sensors. I'm going to choose any finite number of sensors. I'm going to place it at any arbitrary location within the membrane. Each of these sensors is going to give me some bits. This is the total number of bits that I'm going to get from all the sensors. And the smallest possible value that this sum can take, that's my operational definition of what a right distortion function is. And as most problems in information theory, we start from a nasty definition which depends on an infinite number of parameters, grows exponentially in size with the length of the codes that were considered, and our goal is to come up with a nice, simple, computable definition. Computable characterization. So that's the goal that I'm after. Okay? So that's the formulation of my problems. Like I said, I don't have a complete solution to that problem yet, but I'll tell you some results that we have so far. Any questions about this study? Yes.
I apologize, I don't know much about the wave theory, so you are interested in reconstructing the wave and not the underlying source, is that correct?
That's correct, yes.
So I'm assuming that since you know the boundary conditions, if you know the source, you know the wave, but if
yes.
But I guess the other way around is not correct. So that's why you would say I'm interested in constructing the wave rather than the source.
The wave is the thing that I'm measuring. The wave is, suppose that the point source is me talking here in this room. And suppose that what I'm saying is so interesting that, you know, you actually want to record what I'm saying from every possible corner of this room. Your goal is to reproduce my voice as it is perceived at every possible location. Your goal is not to reproduce the motion of my vocal tract.
But
if you could reproduce that, then using the wave equation, you could simulate the mechanism and reproduce everything. But that's not what I'm after. It will, when we see how we compress it, we will see that we'll have to do some of that to achieve optimal compression. But it comes as an afterthought. My goal is to reproduce the wave field. The fact that I will have to do something to estimate what that source is, that's not a goal in itself. If it happens, it happens because it comes out of the analysis of our calling strategy. The end goal is only to reproduce the wave field.
So, from a purely cosmology perspective, it appears to me that if the two problems are not equivalent, if the observability subspace is in a sense projects down to a smaller dimensional space. If, on the other hand,
I know very little about control to make any intelligent comments. Maybe so.
So if your random source is essentially filling up the entire space, then those two problems are equal.
I won't be letting him finish.
What?
I won't be letting him continue.
Okay, so let me tell you about the results that I have so far. My building block is going to be a very simple interpolation formula, so let me try to develop that first. For temperance sampling, I'm not going to do anything interesting. Let's assume that the source that is generating these waves is an unlimited process, and we're going to sample it using the things that we learn that we'll learn in graduate school. So this is everything standard. There's nothing interesting there. Now, if you remember, the solution of the wave equation is of the form of a convolution between the source and something and a kernel that depends on the location where I'm taking that measurement. So I can do something very, if you give me the source at one location and if you give me the measurement at one location and you want to get the measurement at a different location, in principle, you could do something very straightforward. You apply the inverse filter corresponding to the first location. In that way, you recover the source. And then you apply the direct filter for the location where you want to get your measurement. And that's how you arrive at this simple formula. This is straightforward. But there are a couple of catches here to make this work properly. First of all, remember this was the form of the impulse response of the membrane. So your source has to be supported on compact sets that exclude integers. You cannot hit one of the modes of the membrane. You cannot excite it with your source. Otherwise, this thing blows up. If A is of the form of an integer, then this thing grows on bound. Now, that's not the hardest problem. The problem that is more difficult is that if we're going to do this inversion, we need to understand where are the zeros of this group series. And that's how I got John interested in this problem. Because these are the things that he studies for lately. So the interesting thing to say about this is that, I have some good news. Since this function h is analytic in both parameters, the number of zeros that it contains is going to be the number of zeros in any compact set is going to be fine. So that gives us hope that indeed we will be able to solve this inversion problem. But the even better news about this is that it is not entirely straightforward, so we have some work to do here to make sure that these zeros will not all align. Like, for example, if I give you a simple question like this, is there a frequency such that it cannot be heard at any location in the membrane? It's not clear how to answer that question. It's not a straight, it doesn't admit a straightforward answer. So we have some work to do to deal with this. Okay? So now we get to my first result. And I apologize because I'm not going to prove any of the things that I'm going to state here, but I'll be happy to have some discussions later. But let me give you a sense of the results that we have so far. Here's my sampling theory. I am able to prove that this pressure signal can be reconstructed out of a finite number of pressure measurements. So basically, what we have to show is that this kernel does not vanish for all possible locations, for all possible frequencies. And how this comes about, that would be a talk in itself. Let me say that the reason why this is interesting is because it shows that this interpolation that I would like to accomplish here, it's actually possible to do that using basically a filter bank, an array of linear filters. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to deploy my measurements at some locations. I am going to be able to guarantee that at least one of these locations is going to hear one particular frequency component in the source, and I'm going to, since each component in the source will be heard at least one location, then I can design a filter that will pick these components from each location and then reassemble the source and then reassemble the wave. So that's how my sampling theorem comes about. Now, based on that idea, I am going to be able to show that this quantity here, which is the number of bits that I need to send using one particular coding strategy, is going to be upper bounded by a constant. So I don't need, so as I let the number of, if I allow the number of measurements to grow to infinity, that will not result in my right distortion function growing to infinity as well. And this might seem entirely obvious and straightforward, and I should mention that it's not true in general. In particular, in a piece of work that we did with Anna a few years ago, we bumped into a situation where we had that the classical rate distortion function did have this property. It's not, it remains bounded as we increase the number of measurements. But if you throw in the constraints of decentralized observations, where each node gets to observe only a portion of the data field, if that data field is a classical bound-limited processing space, then Professor Newhoff in Michigan proved that this thing actually grows unbound. And that was quite a surprise to us. We had no clue that that would happen. Now, something else that makes this interesting is that, I'm not going to dwell too much on this, but the way in which we go about proving this gives us a suggestion of what the actual rate distortion function we're interested in might look like. I'm not going to speculate much on that because I don't have a concrete result to prove on it yet, but let's say that this gives me some ideas of what to try showing. One last point. This is my last slide, so I'll take one more minute. Is the following. So now suppose that instead of having this membrane in one dimension of length pi, I have an arbitrary polyhedron that contains this membrane. Well, it's going to be difficult to get a nice closed form solution for the wave PDE like what I gave you before, but one of the students in my group, Mingbo, was able to get a solution for the transient period of the wave PDE in an arbitrary polygon, and based on that transient solution alone, he was able to extract enough information that would allow him to basically recover the shape of that polygon again. So what's this problem that we're interested in here? So I'm speaking here, and I don't know the shape of the room that I'm in, but I'm going to take a bunch of acoustic measurements, and based on all those measurements, mm-hmm. I am going to be able to tell the shape of this room. And this was interesting because it relates to a problem that had been open for quite some time. I don't know if someone here ever heard of this problem. It's called, can you hear the shape of a drum? Anyone ever heard of it? 1, 2, 3, 4. Okay, so turns out that in the 1960s, there was an article in a math journal that formulated this question of whether you can determine the boundary conditions of a wave PDE just from measurements of the wave. And that problem had remained open for a long time, and it was finally settled in 1992 by these people here, where they showed two different polygons, which basically have exactly the same set of resonant frequencies. So based on that, they concluded that no, in general, one cannot hear this. But so these polygons are.
They represent the drums.
Right. So these two things resonate at the same frequencies, but they are not related by an isometry. So that was the question that they settled, and so my comment to that is that, well, in fact, based on Mingus' result, what we can say is that yes, indeed, you can hear the shape of a drum, but you have to listen carefully. I mean, you have to listen at this, at the transient behavior of the signal, because in the steady state solution, indeed, from the steady state solution, indeed, the information cannot be recovered. So those are the results that we have so far. So I said I was going to try to relate some of these math problems to applications. So here goes the rest of whatever little bit of credibility I have left. And here's the class of problems that I'm interested in. It's something that we call network-in-the-loop problems. So we have a medium, we have a set of sources acting on that medium, and we have a set of points where we collect information about that source. So we have a control loop of this form. That's the loop that I'm talking about here. This would be a classical problem if it wasn't because of the fact that the sensing is done over a network, and the actuation is also done over a network. So it's your classical setup, but with observations and controls not done by a single A to D and D to A device, but by a device that is a network itself.
What are you controlling?
The wave itself.
Oh, the wave.
Yeah.
So you're actuating the wave.
I'm actuating the wave. Here's the part where my credibility disappears. And the thing that got me thinking about this problem was, when I watched the Star Wars movie, there was this meeting of the Jedi Council where, so this is Anakin Skywalker, and these are people that are attending the meeting of the council from a remote location. Now, if you want to synthesize a person walking around in a movie, in a room and talking, well, you cannot take a speaker and move, and physically move it everywhere. So what you would do is you would put on the boundaries a large array of speakers, and you would try to synthesize the same wave field that would be created by a point source acting at an arbitrary location. So it turns out that these kind of problems find applications in many things. So I talk here about rendering of virtual acoustic sources, noise cancellation, cancer treatment, electronic countermeasures. You want to make someone believe that, that someone is walking over there when in fact you're walking over here. I mean, there's countless applications for this, and I don't have time to go much into this. So I guess that's it. That's the end of my talk.